I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So I don't talk to too many people who have their own Funko Pop.
Oh, yes, I do have mine.
Yeah, that's
I do.
That's pretty exciting, man. I think that's the gauge, right? You get a Funko Pop, you've made it. That's the deal.
Is that better than a bobblehead?
That's a tough call, Brian. That's a tough call. I mean, I'd get your Funko Pop. I'd put it up next to my Pedro Martinez bobblehead. You do have the pot of chili with your Funko Pop, so that gives you the edge on a lot of bobbleheads, I'd say.
All right, well that's fair enough. I couldn't even get one from Funko Pop. I couldn't even find one myself.
What? You don't have your own Funko Pop?
Well, so I was at this convention, and I was meeting all these fans, and they were bringing all these Funko Pops. They had just come out, like, the week before, and I'd had some people, and I tried to go buy one, and I couldn't even get one, and I'm signing all of these things. So I finally just thought, you know what? Funko Pop needs to hear from the people. And so I posted on my social media, and I just said very nicely, but I said, why can't I get one of these? How do I get one of these? And the next day, three people brought me one.
Oh, okay.
So it was literally the goodness out of people's of hearts that I have any. And Funko still has not. Because I was trying to just call out Funko Pop. But,
jeez, you think...
It's a crazy thing. People collect those things like mad.
Oh, yeah. My daughter is one of those people. She's got like about 50 of them right now. And there's a guy who works here at WAF who's got a couple hundred of them. So you've entered into serious nerd territory. You've got a Funko Pop. You're going to conventions. And do people come up to you like Trekkies dressed like you or anything like that and say, oh, my God, Kevin Malone, you're the best? Or freak you out in
any way?
Absolutely.
People are – I feel like the big thing that people – when they dress as me, they go back to the episode of Jim and Pam's wedding mostly, and they'll wear tissue box shoes.
Nice, yes.
Which, I always say to them, it was really funny when you left home this morning, but it doesn't feel so good now, right? And they're like, no, it doesn't. It really hurts. I'm like, yes, because it's a tissue box on your foot.
That's awesome. Well, it's a shame that a lot of people, I don't know what your feelings are, a lot of folks that were on the cast, like Jenna Fischer and others saying that there's probably not going to be any kind of reunion or reunion show. But I want to run something by you that I read that Steve Carell said, and he said that The Office probably couldn't be made now mostly because of his characters, Michael Scott's inappropriate behavior and comments and things like that. And I think that was kind of that was the catalyst of the show, though. It was kind of like All in the Family, where he started out and then in the end Michael kind of learned his lesson, like Archie did in All the Family. But how do you feel about that?
A couple people have asked me that in the past, and I respectfully disagree with Steve, or at least I disagree with how his comments were taken. I actually haven't heard the original thing that he said. I know basically what he said. I think what he was saying was that it would be harder to get it approved to start with. Like, I think that like the pitch of this character and this guy now would make people scared. Mm. I think the idea that, The Office has shown, by some metrics you could calculate that The Office, we haven't filmed it in 5 years and it's still the number one show on television in terms of people watching it. If you look at Netflix and streaming and all those numbers, I think that it has a universality that is undeniable, and the popularity, with people who, particularly now who are younger and weren't alive when we were even filming some of the episodes. I think that clearly that shows there is a need and a desire for it. And it might be harder for it to exist on network television, NBC, but I think there would be a place for it, yes.
I think it's a shame that, you mentioned that that it's be hard to be approved, and it's just people are so jumpy now. And for the whole movement, the Me Too movement, it's needed, but I think it at the same time it may there's more fear about that than there are people maybe trying to advance the cause, and it's hurting the cause.
I don't fully disagree with what you're saying. I think, I'm always taken back. We were maybe halfway through the run. And, of course, my parents were very proud of the show and of me and loved the show. And, of course, they would tell their friends and this show. And a couple of times I heard from my mom, like, oh, so-and-so tried it. And they just couldn't watch it. They thought it was just so terrible. It was just, he was just so mean and awful. And I said, Mom, because at the time, like, not necessarily in terms of the same demographic of people that was watching The Office, but, in terms of, like, total viewers, the number one show on television was CSI. And I said, well, do they watch CSI? She said, yes. And I said, so seeing a half-naked young woman brutally murdered in with basically no clothes on at the beginning of an episode, that somehow was palatable for people, but hearing Michael say things that maybe touched a little too close to home, that was something that people couldn't watch. And to me, that was also always very interesting, because he was cringy, I think, because of what he was saying and some of the truth that exists out there.
Mm-hmm.
That it coming from people as well.
Well, You're on the phone to talk about One Last Night, which I watched last night, and you have a part in that. And at first, I thought your part was just that part near the beginning. I was like, "Is that it? Is that all we're going to see of Brian Baumgartner in this?" But it turns out to be much more involved later on. I gotta say, it didn't. I'm not trying to spoil anything here. There's a part in the film where there's a big realization. And I thought it was going to go in a much darker direction, but I was very surprised that it didn't. It's a pretty cool little story. And what made you want to get involved in this independent film?
The director is French, and I had seen some stuff that some previous projects that he had done were sent to me. I think he had me in mind when he was writing this character and had approached me. And I just thought he was very interesting. He just had a kind of a unique vision and perspective, liked to shoot things in kind of a different way, which appealed to me. And he was just a real pleasure to work with. And yeah, I think the film, I think it is a very sweet film and takes, does, like you say, goes in a direction that maybe a cynical mind wouldn't expect. Again, without giving too much away, it's fun to see my character maybe win one a little bit. In the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to give it away either, but yeah, it's a good ending, let's say, for you and especially. So
yeah.
Your character. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Brian Baumgartner, thank you very much for joining us here today. And two things. Have you ever been approached about, in the same way the Soup Nazi has made a few bucks on it from Seinfeld, have you ever been approached about marketing your chili?
Yes.
Yes? Did it happen?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good.
Yes, I have.
Okay. All right. I want to taste the family secret. And then may I also suggest maybe getting Scrantonicity back together for a tour, possibly?
The interesting thing about that, I will give you this spoiler,
because
it is kind of documented. I don't really play the drums.
Oh.
So by the end of the show, I could play it much better.
Right.
Very first episode was a lot of pretending, but I was a very quick story. I was going to Arizona, and I was doing a charity event with Alice Cooper.
Oh, nice.
And I got picked up from the airport by someone who works for his foundation. And they're talking and blah, 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 and there's a dinner tomorrow night. And then, oh, so Alice, at a certain point, is going to call you up on stage. He's told the drummer, and you'll play drums on the school show for summer. I was like, dude, no, I will not be doing that. No, there is no chance I would get up on stage with Alice Cooper and play the drums. If I make a mistake, who knows what would happen? There's no way that I would do that. So unfortunately, a full concert tour is not possible.
Okay.
With me, but yeah, I'll see what I can do about the chili.
Okay. All right. Well, Brian, thank you very much, man. And One Last Night, it's available. It's pretty much available on all digital platforms right now, too, so everybody should check it out when they get a chance. Thanks a lot, man. We appreciate you joining us.
All right. Thanks a lot.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.